Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
So, Rob and Amanda are finishing up the delves. So they'll be here any minute, but I think let's not start all the way without them.
Okay.
But I am really curious. So you guys, you know, saw the banquet last night. You got some ideas on what coming for Starfinder. What are you most excited about for Starfinder?
Dead Zones.
Just see, that's great. Like, just really quick. Like, what are the things that you're like? Oh, that's the thing that's been previewed that I'm most into.
Technomancers.
All right, technomancers.
I could create a planet in my own campaign, and it won't be overwritten by anything you do because the galaxy is humongous.
Yes. Yes. Back there. Bug people!
Starship combat.
Nice.
I like the interplay of the idea between you can pick a race, a class, an archetype, and a theme, and it have totally feel like creating a paladin with a soldier class.
Yeah.
Lore and fluff.
Okay, did you say
lore and
fluff? Oh, yeah. I thought you said gore, and I was like, we can do that.
Back to the Necromancer.
Yeah.
Just all the crazy aliens and new worlds that we can have.
Yeah.
I'm just curious about how technically high sci-fi or soft sci-fi I can make it, you know? That's what I'm looking forward to trying to make it smart. Travel repair.
Hey, Rob.
Hi, Rob!
Wow.
Hi, everybody.
She is behind me. I don't know how right behind she is. I think she was still finishing. We were both running the right, delves, so.
We'll start our introductions at this end, and maybe she'll get here by the time we get to the end. Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming to the Starfinder panel, or the first of, I guess there are a couple of Starfinder panels, right?
Yeah.
I don't even remember which one this is. We're going to talk about Starfinder. Yes, okay, perfect. So I'm James L. Sutter. I'm the creative director on Starfinder. I've also done a bunch of other stuff for Paizo over the last 13 years. A little bit of everything, but right now I'm the creative director on Starfinder.
Hi, I'm Rob McCrary, or Robert G. McCrary, as the card says. I'm senior developer at Paizo and one of the Starfinder design leads.
Hi, I'm Owen Casey Stevens. I am a developer at Paizo. I've also done a number of things over the past few years, including freelancing way long ago. And I am also one of the design leads.
Let's keep up the pattern. I am Jason W.E.B. Keeley. Amanda now has to have four middle initials. And I'm on the Star Wars team. I'm on the editorial team and sort of came over to sort of help out and do what needs to get done when these guys get too busy.
Yeah, I mean, that's selling yourself short. Like, Jason actually has been, you know, some lead development on some pretty big... Well, I guess we announced Alien Archive
last night.
Or Ned didn't announce it, but showed you the cover for it. And Jason has actually been one of the lead developers on that, really tackling a lot of critters.
All the critters.
Yeah, Jason, critters. Jason is one of our really skilled editors. He's also one of our really skilled developers. He's also a really skilled maker of puzzles. So,
don't... And Owen is very handsome. And all those other things, too. He's also very smart and red, but he's also handsome. I have to
You're just objectifying him. All right.
So, and then point is, don't listen to him. He's smart.
Amanda will be here shortly. She's and we'll let her introduce herself, but she is the development coordinator and also a developer on Starfinder. So, I don't have necessarily a big presentation. I kind of feel like with something like this, we should just do mostly questions and just tell you guys what it is you want to know. Does anybody have any opening statements?
I want to actually have an opening question, just in case we need an opening statement. Does anyone here not feel like they have a basic idea of what Starfinder is? Okay, good, we can now move on. I just wanted to make sure there's no one here who's like, Starfinder, what even?
Yeah. All right, great. Well, then in that case... What do you guys want to know about Starfinder? We'll tell you what we can. There's some stuff we can't. Oh, hey, and here's Amanda.
Awesome. Hi, Amanda!
Hello!
we just all introduced...
I totally planned this.
We just all introduced ourselves, so you have to introduce yourself. All
right. Hello, everybody. I am Amanda Camden-Coates. I am Development Coordinator at Paizo and a member of the Starfinder design team.
All right. So, questions. First one, right over here.
So I know there's some changes in terms of mechanics or their basic game design between Pathfinder and Starfinder. What would you say are some of the most significant changes, and maybe how does that reflect your philosophy of Pathfinder game design versus Starfinder game design?
Yeah. Well, first off, I want to say that there is a panel tomorrow called Starfinder versus Pathfinder where we'll really be talking about. So I think we can answer some stuff, if you want the really in-depth thing, we have a whole hour tomorrow that we're going to be talking about exactly that. So check that out, and then you look like you wanted to say something. Sort of.
You wanted to actually answer.
I just wanted to point out, like, hey, this is a whole big thing.
So here, one of our design mandates was that if Pathfinder is a 10 in terms of total complexity, and the beginner box is a 1 in terms of total complexity, we are shooting for a 6 in terms of total complexity. If we have to give up 10 points of customization, but we get to get rid of 50 points of complexity, that's a trade we're willing to make. There are still a lot of things we have done to make sure that you can tweak your character, but someone was mentioning they were really excited about archetypes and themes. So instead of a favorite class bonus that you can change at every single level as long as you're in your favorite class, and another set of feats that affect what your favorite class is, and something that affects what your favorite class is a prestige class, and two campaign traits that can be one of 8 million things so that there are a total of 6,400 million combinations, we have some themes, and you pick a theme. Does that mean early on there aren't as many combinations? Yes, but they're pretty broad themes. You pick one, and instead of, over the course of your career, 22 tiny little changes to your characters, there are some big block ones. Similarly with archetypes, right now all the archetypes we've designed you can apply to any character class. So if we decide we're going to do Holy Warriors, we don't have to say, here's the Holy Warrior for the fighter, here it is for the War Priest, here it is for the Champion, here it is for the Swashbuckler. We can just say, this is what a Holy Warrior gets, and that's not one we've done yet, but if we did. And you can bolt that onto any class. So that core philosophy of try to make blocks that are as applicable as possible and make your customization easy, so you don't find yourself saying, I'd really like to do this thing, this sounds cool, so it'll take me 5 levels and 4 feats and 2 extra skill ranks to be able to get
books.
And 3 books to get there. We want to try and boil that down. So that is one of the important design philosophy changes. We changed how we get the necessary damage per round and exactly how the defenses break out. And we mix some of the skills together because we have to have a computer skill because you can't have a science fiction game if you can't hack a computer. But we probably don't need ride and survival as separate things because you're not going to be on a horse on a plane as often as you are in Pathfinder. So there are things where we decided what is the best option for a science fantasy game and made an adjustment. Our hope is that it will be very, very familiar to you, but still be able to introduce enough surprises that it will feel different and interesting. And as Rob said, tomorrow we can get into the nitty-gritty of exactly, instead of iterative attacks, you can make 2 attacks, even at first level, but they're both at -4. That there are changes like that, and we're happy to go into them at length later, but I think the core philosophy is we're trying to simplify as much as possible without giving up all the cool stuff about Pathfinder.
I think actually just to add 1 or 2 quick specifics. There's stuff like armor class has now, you know, the various types of Pathfinder armor class have now been replaced by kinetic armor class and energy armor class, where somebody's shooting at you with lasers or lightning bolts, that targets energy armor class. If somebody's shooting with bullets or swords, that targets kinetic. And doing that actually opened up some really fun design space, even though in some ways it's simpler, because you don't have touch AC, you don't have flat-footed except as a condition. But it also gives a lot of design space, because now armor has 2 different ratings, and so you can say, oh, it's not just I get the +3 armor, it's, well, I want the one that's better at this one or better at this one. So stuff like that.
More questions?
So, just a warning, I have a huge thread of Facebook questions that I'm going to keep bringing stuff from.
We'll start with the top.
All right, Simon Ring asks, how are cybernetics going to work in relation to body item slots? Will they consume a slot, or will they have their own slots, or will that not require slots at all?
You developed that section, right?
I did. Yeah, so cybernetics, the slot system is different than in Pathfinder. We don't have as many magic items. We don't have slots for magic items. Instead, we have basically body parts, body slots. So you can't have 2 pieces of cybernetics that are plugged into your eyes, for example. You can only have one thing that's modifying your eyes. And in fact, we call them body systems. And the core rulebook lists out, here are the common body systems. I believe there's 7 or 8 of them. including limbs, and if it's limbs, then and if it's a hand, we'll indicate in parentheses hand or leg. There are, you know, I think brainstem is one of the systems that we use as well. You can plug something into your brainstem and affect is your sort of your mind and sort of how that works. So we list out how many body systems there are, and in the core rulebook, each of the cybernetics takes up one of those slots. So we're not saying that those are all the slots that exist. There are probably people out there in the galaxy that have developed something that plugs into your kidney, but that is not an option that we had for the core rulebook, so we didn't list that. And that leaves the design space open for lots of other different types of cybernetics in the future. But there is a full list of cybernetics for the slots that we've mentioned in the core rulebook.
And just to play off that a little bit, those same systems apply to your cybernetics, your biotech.
Yeah.
If instead you are getting a gland from a dragon introduced into your body, that will have a system associated
yeah,
with
that's
it.
The throat.
If you've had a weird device bred up by Breathidons to assist you, later on we'll have rules for necrographs, where if you want an undead part bolted into you, those are all augmentation systems, and they use that same system she's talking about. So you can't have cybernetic eyes and ghoul eyes and fungus eyes. Pick one.
Fungus eyes.
Good job.
Keep going right across here.
So with the systems, is there a path to upgrade? You get to a certain cybernetic and you can later upgrade that system without having to have yet another operation or something?
Nope, life is harsh.
Okay.
You have to have that, but we do have things that like are better, but you have to have...
You can uninstall a cybernetics and have a different cybernetics installed, and we give rules for how to have something implanted and how to have something removed. Be good at medicine.
Yeah.
That's a good tip.
Well, or, you know, mostly it's outpatient at this point. I mean, the cybernetics are a big deal, right? So it's not like you're having to make a skill check, and if that skill check has failed, you'll take 2d6 con damage, right? People have been excited about being the augmented for centuries in this setting, so that's a pretty safe standard procedure. It's like LASIK.
Yeah, in most cases, the purchase price of the cybernetic takes into account that you have paid to have this installed, so it is not an onerous thing to buy a cybernetic and then try to figure out who in this little settlement can install it. The person selling it typically knows how to install it.
Let's maybe jump to the back there. Green shirt.
Hi, Cobalt Cleaver here. Yeah. Can you give me anything about kobolds, if you want?
You're thinking about kobolds. Honestly, we haven't really covered kobolds yet. Like, I'm a huge fan of them, but so far we haven't really done anything with them.
So, go ahead.
Like we said at the banquet last night, though, with the Legacy chapter and the core rule, like, we haven't officially put kobolds into anything yet. We actually haven't released anything yet, but there are detailed guidelines on converting Pathfinder content over, so certainly in anyone's game it would be super, super easy to bring kobolds over.
Yeah, although that said, will you one day see space kobolds? Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I can't resist, right?
I mean, there are no monster stat blocks in the core rulebook. We didn't have room. We do have the free RPG Day product, which gives you some idea what these things look like. Alien Archive is announced. That'll be the first thing out. There will be things at the back of the APs. Kobolds deserve and will receive our attention and best efforts. We didn't want to throw out two sentences that locks us into not our best idea when we get there. Will there be kobolds in space? Absolutely. Do we have ready to announce exactly where they are, what they're doing, and what they've killed? No, not yet.
Nope.
Stay away in the back there.
From what I've read in the blog and stuff like that, it sounds like the Starfinder's the extension of Pathfinder. Can you kind of elaborate on that whole kind of environment and how it kind of all fits together? From my understanding, I'm hearing everything from play dwarves and everything like that. And there's also AI and things like that that I'm interested in. That's why I'm hearing things.
I'm happy to talk about that. So Starfinder is thousands of years in Pathfinder's future. But there's been this period between the time of Starfinder and the time of Pathfinder called the Gap, where it's like a system-wide amnesia. where
galaxy-wide.
I mean, it's gods-wide. It's system as in game system-wide.
Okay. Yeah, not solar system.
Yeah, yeah. So it's this massive amnesia, essentially, where even the gods either don't know or won't say what happened at that time. But that it's during that time that you know, Galarian disappeared, that Absalom Station came to be, and the idea is that you can still occasionally find hints as to what happened in that time, but history really, as Starfinder knows it, only started in earnest and became reliable in the last 300 or so years. And there were a variety of reasons why we did that, partially because we think it's a cool trope, but partially because we didn't want everybody to just immediately be like, oh, hey, let's see what happens with Cheliax. When does Cheliax finally get destroyed, right? You know, oh, let's go to Space Wikipedia and find out. So we wanted to make sure that Pathfinder, since it's still going, still felt like the present. Let's see, what other design philosophy things was?
It is the same universe, it is the same cosmology. If your space trooper is hit in the head with a space sword, you end up in front of Phirasma just like everyone else. The Boneyard is there, the astral plane is there, the shadow plane is there, Zon-Kathan is somewhere out in the darkness. Even though we have a different Core 20, which Rob can talk to better than I can, but it's not that all of the gods we don't mention went away, it's that the focus is on what is primarily influencing society right now. And so far we're talking about the core rulebook, right? We don't have rules for occultists and investigators in the core rules of Pathfinder. That took a long time to get to. So there's a lot of stuff. We're not saying it's not around. We just haven't gotten around to those rules yet. Our core races are different because they're the ones that have the main influence in the area that we are assuming you start in. We did, in fact, include rules for playing dwarves, elves, gnomes, halflings, half-orcs in what we call the legacy section, which is where we talk about how to move stuff back and forth as best we can.
Oh, thank you. Very good.
Let's go right here.
Silly question. Are any of the characters at any point going to be like, okay, what is that? I don't know. I've done enough of this. Hold on. Let's take a picture.
Sure.
Oh, gosh. It's horrible. Okay. Starfinder Wiki says, we're doomed. Okay, let's run away.
We've got, you know, in the infospheres, you know, planetary infospheres. There's not a, we very specifically did not do a just, like, galaxy-wide internet where you can always log on and find out everything, because that's really boring. What we instead have is sort of localized information spheres where a given planet will have, you know, an internet and the information that it has. But, and you can get, like, sort of, you can download sort of condensed copies of that, right? Like, sort of this space encyclopedia kind of thing. But you can't just, you know, if you're out in the vast at some new planet or some little colony world, you can't access all the information they have on Absalom Station. You know, that just gets too... We didn't want this to be a game about the singularity. at least not exclusively.
The other just logical part of that is if you go to Google right now and you type in, and I don't want to get political, but you type in, why is it warm today? There's not a single universally accepted correct answer. So those infospheres let you do things like, I'm going to take 20 on a knowledge check when I take the extra time, which represents taking the time to search through every answer I can, but then my knowledge base is still what allows me to determine which of these 47 theories and two conspiracy theories do I accept as true. Right. Because the infospheres, as you said, it's not like the infosphere itself became a god and all the information on it is correct. That would be really helpful. Didn't happen. So even though there is this kind of advanced technology that does not remove the need for your character to know stuff to make use of the knowledge that you have access to.
And the game system also takes into account research techniques and search term functions. So it's not just as simple as I go to my Starship's database and I look up everything about Absalom Station. No, no, you need to tell the GM what search term are you looking for, what types of information are you looking for, make a computer's check to figure out whether you typed in something that gives you what you need to know. So it's not just as simple as I scan a thing, I get all the information, and I run away because I know everything about it. There's a lot of mystery still built into it.
Boolean searches, the role-playing game!
Well, and if something's a secret, there are smart, high-level people that have their own computer skill that don't want you to get that information, so...
Sure. And that's when hacking comes into play.
Yeah. Alright, let's go green hat over here.
Yeah. Are there clerics in Starfinder?
Are there what?
Clerics. Oh. So there are not straight-up clerics. What we have instead, at least at this point, is the mystic class, And really, they fulfill a lot of the same functions. They're going to be the ones who are most likely to be tied to a god. But we actually, one big difference in Starfinder is we removed the distinction between arcane and divine magic. Magic is magic. And same for psychic magic, actually. Like, all magic is just supernatural phenomena that is not just straight-up science, right? And so different classes sort of tap into that power differently. Technomancers are really focused on dealing with sort of... They're like software engineers, but hacking the universe itself, right? Like, it's very regimented and disciplined, and they're really good with machines and hacking physics and, like, building laws. And mystics are much more intuitive casters. They're all about channeling forces from whatever the source is. Sometimes it's a god, sometimes it's not. Sometimes they don't even know where it comes from. It's kind of like a blend of cleric and oracle and several of those ideas from Pathfinder. And they focus, because they're so intuitive, they're a lot better with messy systems like biological things. You know, they're more about mental magic, about these sort of living things.
And if you don't want to play a mystic, we have the priest theme, so you say you're a member of the clergy, but you're actually a mechanic because the god you want to worship is a god of mechanics. You can be the mechanic with the priest theme, and that gives you a little bit of, like, as you level up, you might be like, oh, well, now I'm well-known in the clergy, I can go talk to people who also worship this god, and they'll give me some benefits or whatever, you know, they'll give me some free stuff. So there's, like, different ways to kind of go at it, but there's no cleric class.
All right, let's go green shirt right there, yeah.
Speaking on that here, is there, with the cosmology of the gods and goddesses that were obviously in Pathfinder right now, you still have influence thousands of years later, obviously, is there certain gods and goddesses that actually, because now things have kind of expanded, have starting to get a lot more rooms, like, for example, Abadar, because he's about civilization. Now that just gives him a much wider purview.
So in the same way that Pathfinder has the kind of core 20 gods that are in the core rulebook, but there's lots of other gods, that's the same kind of thing in Starfinder. And so what it is, it's kind of a mixture of everything. There are some gods that were core 20 in Pathfinder that are still worshipped just as widely in Starfinder. Phrasma is a good example. She's the goddess of death and birth and fate. Nobody can escape that, so she's still just as big. Other gods who are really big in Pathfinder are maybe kind of lesser. We don't talk about them, but that doesn't mean they're not there. Eventually, we probably will do more of a god's book. At the same time, we have new core races, and those races brought some of their gods with them. So there's going to be gods that you've never heard of before, alien gods that are now much more widely worshipped. And then there are some of the more minor gods that you might have read about in Pathfinder that were, you know, like an imperial lord or something, who is now a much bigger god or a much more popular god. So it's kind of a mixture of all that. There will be some familiar faces, some not familiar, for some lesser familiar faces, and then like, oh, I've never heard of this guy before at all.
Yeah, and we're having fun playing with it, right? Like, most of the time, if a god isn't in the core 20, they're still around. You know, people keep asking about Caden Kalian because he's not in the core 20. And my answer is that I think he's been passed out on Shellen's lawn for the last several millennia. just like, oh, not again. But then there are some gods like Torag has gone missing. He went missing presumably, you know, the same way Galarian did, but nobody knows or nobody's talking. There's stuff like that. One other thing I want to point out is that it's often, one of the reasons we wanted to mix things up is, like Rob says, like, you've got all these alien races. Isn't it weird if all the core 20 are, like, the gods that were most influential on Galarian, and to humans and whatnot? But we've tried to mix it up. I also think it's important to recognize that not all races, view the gods the exact same way. Like, I think Phrasma is worshipped on basically every world because, like you say, she's universal. But they probably don't always call her Phrasma, and they probably don't think of her as looking like a person, right? Like, if you come from the land of squid people, like, they're going to worship, you know, Phrasma, but it's going to be squid Phrasma, right? Like, and it'll sound like, so I think it's...
Is that her voice or her name?
Both. All right. Like, yeah.
Is that canon?
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's important to recognize that, like, the gods are interpreted through many different cultural lenses. It's not quite as humanocentric as Pathfinder.
And obviously, we can't fit all of the gods from Pathfinder into the core rulebook. So, you know, if you're GMing Starfinder, and there's a god from Pathfinder that you really want who's not mentioned in the Starfinder, it is still the same universe,
yeah,
like we've talked about, you know, or ask your GM if you're playing, hey, can I be a worshiper of this god? Because we, with few exceptions, like Torag, who we said, ooh, he's gone now.
And Rovagud, because... Yeah.
And Rovagud, because the planet that Rovagud was inside is gone. But, you know, it's virtually any of the gods from Pathfinder could be worshipped in Starfinder.
Yeah. So let's go right there.
Shenanigans in combat. My players think that they failed if they actually have to draw a weapon. But last night something was said about no combat maneuvers?
No, there are definitely still combat maneuvers.
There's no combat maneuver defense.
We've tried to simplify how...
That conversation we had about simplifying things, we don't have combat maneuver bonuses as a separate calculation. We don't have combat maneuver defenses as a separate calculation. Combat maneuvers exist. You make a melee attack roll against an opponent's KAC +8. If you hit, you succeed. Done.
So you can still bull rush, you can still trip, you can still throw sand in someone's eyes.
You can still grapple.
Yeah.
It doesn't even provoke.
Again, trying to find those systems. Part of this was a design philosophy because we want the game to be a little bit more approachable. And part of it is just, once we got together, it's like, okay, we need all the rules for a game as robust as Pathfinder. Also, we need a big setting chapter. Also, we need starships. Also, we need a conversion legacy chapter. It's like, congratulations, Eric. You've just told us to write an 800-page core rule book. It's like, we got to fit it all in. So simplification has been helpful there, too. Let's see. Jason.
Starship Combat Initiative System, what do you guys do?
Alright, so Starship Combat is everyone chooses a role when they get on the ship, and there are about 5 roles. And when Starship Combat happens, it happens in phases. The first phase is the engineering phase, when all engineers act simultaneously across all ships, friend or foe. Even if you've got multiple engineers on your ship, everyone sort of acts, does the things that engineers do, which is boosting power to certain systems or repairing systems when they're broke. Then we move on to what is called the helm phase, and that is sort of where an initiative role takes place. All pilots who are piloting ships roll a piloted check. However, when it comes time to move your ship on the hex grid, whoever rolled the lowest moves their ship first. And that way, if you're better at piloting, you get to react to the other people's movements and figure out the best way to position yourself. During the helm phase is also when a pilot acts. Any corresponding science officer will also act at the same time in order to scan enemy ships, lock on certain systems, that sort of thing. Once all the ships have moved around, we move on to the gunnery phase, and that's when all guns shoot each other. And so those sort of, we do those... We resolve those and sort of we roll them in the same order we do the piloting checks, but all the damage is sort of applied simultaneously. So even if you've blown up a ship that technically goes after you, it still gets a shot off. The captain, which is the 5th role, can act during any of those phases once per game turn. And the captain is basically like, hey, do better. Hey, you're doing a great job. And give out some bonuses. Occasionally, hey, do twice. So
that's like exactly the Starfinder management. You're doing great. Do it again.
once all the guns have been shot, we start all over again with engineering. So everyone gets to do something during space combat. And if there becomes a something happens that you need, the captain's like, God, maybe got some a little good at better at engineering, and then something really breaks, and the engineer's like, ah, captain, I can't handle it. The captain can run down and be an engineer for a round, basically, and do that engineering. So you can move or shift around. It's probably you don't want to just sort of have the pilot leave just walk away from the console and go down and fix something, because then no one's piloting the ship.
So you're saying Han Solo should not run to the back of the Millennium Falcon, go down a ladder, and get on a turbo laser?
Only if Chewbacca is there to take over for
okay,
the
good.
Pilot. Yeah, so that's basically how it works.
All right, let's go right there.
Now, silly question. You have Starship Combat, and you have, obviously, the tactical combat with the people. How do those mix? Let's say there is a small village of kobolds, and we realize we could walk in there and shoot them with our guns, or we could take our ship, fly it down to their village, and just machine gun them all to death. Or just jump out of their ship and then shoot them there, or board their ship, or things like that.
They do not mix, specifically because we didn't want this to be the game of dropping rocks on people from orbit constantly. that's probably a war crime. B, it's just not fun.
For exactly the same reason that all Pathfinder games aren't a take my ship, I cast flight on it until it can be airborne, I sail it over to the castle, and I drop cannonballs on it, even though all of those options are available. We simply aren't going to write adventures that you can fix by blasting kobolds from space, because that was handled by someone less interesting than your player character. If there's a problem on Absalom Station and you try and fix it by taking your starship, flying down a corridor in Absalom Station, and blowing away a bar in Absalom Station, that will not go over well.
That sounds kind of cool, though, flying a ship.
Yeah, down. Inside the corridor.
Well, maybe for a like almost final adventure of an AP, that might happen,
yeah,
but...
Alright, let's see. Who have I not... Yeah, you read that.
Okay, so in Iron Gods, the Kasatha are this really... not very technologically advanced race, very far away.
Yeah.
And then last night, they show up in this generation ship. It seems like there's a lot of story there.
Yeah, yeah. So, cool if I take this one.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, take this one.
Okay, so the Kasatha were a race that we knew we wanted to play with. But like you say, like they're presented in Pathfinder as sort of this kind of not very technologically advanced sort of like warrior society. And the thing to remember there is that those Kasatha got to Galarian by, like, they were picked up by somebody else. Like, it wasn't their society. They were essentially, like, you know, zoo specimens in a ship that then ended up there. So, like, their connection to their original culture was not nearly the same as in Starfinder. The Kasatha that we've got are straight from Kasath. They, hundreds of years ago, got a message from the Witch Weirds, actually, who you will notice look a lot like Kasathas. Yeah, exactly. And so they were like, "Hey, you know, there's this prophesied world that is in another star system that's gonna be perfect for you guys because your world's kind of dying." And so the Kasatha built this giant generation ship called the Adari, and piloted it for, because this was actually before the revelation.
So this is the Adari.
Yeah. So this was before the revelation of faster than light travel, or sorry, drift travel. Yeah, they built this giant ship and they traveled for hundreds of years to get to what turned out to be the system containing Akaton, and they were like, "We're here to colonize Akaton." And in the meantime, Akaton's like,
"We're good.
Yeah, we're pretty technologically advanced now, so maybe you need to back off, huh?" And so the Kasatha ended up kind of staying in the system and becoming part of the Pact Worlds, and they've got this really elaborate traditional culture. It's really fascinating.
Good.
Keep in mind also that the Kasatha from Iron Gods were picked up thousands of years ago, and when they arrived on Galarian, Galarian was also very primitive.
Sure.
And now,
right,
you know, the whole setting has been moved forward thousands of years. So,
yeah.
It's both the same and different.
I want to point out the one other connection that he's not mentioning. You see, there's a lot of story there. So the Kasatha, who have four arms, get a message from the Witch Weirds, who have four arms, that they should go colonize a planet which has the Shobat, which have four arms. Is there a connection between all three of these? Yes, something. Is there a story there? Yes. Is it all spelled out? No, not yet. Because
did we spell it out?
There's some in Alien Archive. There's some,
yeah, we don't
yes,
spell it all
sure,
out, but there's definitely
okay,
some
okay,
stuff
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Four arms.
All right, let's go right here.
So last PaizoCon, when we had the design panel that discussed things about Starfinder, a large portion of it was discussing ship AIs. Is that something that made it through to the actual design? And if so, what does that look like?
It looks like a line on the ship that says ship AI plus four. Yeah, so we have a computer system. Computers, a true artificial intelligence that has a soul like an android is sufficiently in common that we do not provide rules for it within the game. However, there's a thing called an artificial personality, and that is Siri plus 5,000. That is something that has 40 billion lines of code that says, if someone says, "I feel sad," you say, "Well, maybe that's because you ate the entire cake." That is not an actual person, but it has a really complicated algorithm, so you can have talk with it, you can play chess with it, it can tell a joke, it can chide you. That artificial personality is easily interactable with no computer skills. You can just talk to it. We have the rules for how those things work in the computer section, and starships get one. So you look and it tells you how computers work. The starship get, and if the computer can do something different because it's hooked up to the starship, that's covered in the starship section.
Right. Yeah. And that was actually something we spent a lot of time talking about in the office. Like, what is the difference between a, you know, an AI that is just a machine and something that is a person, like, where do you draw that line? Because it needs to be, you know, especially with, like, robots and, you know, questions about consent and whatnot. That was very important, and fortunately we have, with, you know, androids and whatnot, like, whether or not you get a soul that attaches to you is really the sort of defining thing. And that's accepted by most people in the PAC worlds. That said, because I really, really love controversy, I think it's interesting to have some extremists in the system that say, well, if it passes the Turing test, like, if you can't tell whether it has a soul or not just by talking to it, what right do you have to treat it as if it's different based on this thing that you can't tell the difference, right? So most people don't agree with that, but... I think big philosophical questions should be in every role-playing game all the time, so I'm that GM.
We made a game mechanical distinction.
Yeah.
In the real world, there's bigotry that is not based on reality.
Yeah.
We didn't decide that bigotry ceased to exist, because that would not be realistic and it might not even be fun.
Yeah.
So, do we say an artificial personality is just a program and that's it? We sort of say that. Do we say that androids have souls and you could be reincarnated as one and therefore they are full-on people? Yeah, we definitely say that. Does that mean everyone in the setting agrees with that? No, sure doesn't.
Sure. All right, so actually, raise your hand if I have not called on you yet and you have a question. All right, let's go back there.
Let's talk fluff, particularly fiction. Will it be in the book? Will it be in the monthly books, or will it be in separate novelizations?
So there's no fiction currently in any of the products. There are some examples of play that are fun, script type, they like almost transcripts of somebody's game session. But yeah, right now we don't have any fiction. Would we love to do Starfinder novels someday? Obviously. And I do think Starfinder comics are coming. Exactly when and how is still up in the air, but Eric was comfortable announcing yesterday that Starfinder comics will happen.
And we do have some iconic backstories.
Yeah, exactly.
On the site as well.
On the blog, some of them are there, more are coming. That's a great start for it. But right now, yeah, there's not a lot of outlets for straight-up fiction.
Okay, particularly just because it's a new world and there's no lore yet except what's in the book. We need to have, like, an alien anthology or something.
Well,
like
so
that.
There is...
Short stories.
There is a lot of... one thing we are trying to do in the books is get a lot more flavor into the rules and vice versa. You know, Pathfinder kind of has had this long-standing distinction between the setting and the rule system, and that is not a thing Starfinder is doing anymore. You're going to get both right up in each other's business all the time. And so even in the core rulebook, right, like there's a lot of setting information there, and we're going to continue that forward.
We have pages and pages and pages where we talk about all of the worlds in the Pact worlds and some of the worlds outside of the Pact worlds, what some of the major threats are and what some of the major factions are that are handled rather than a game mechanical fashion. At this point, we're saying, here is Abadar Corp. That God has his own corporation. It is his church. Here's a rundown of what they're like in a broad sense. Even the races have, if you're a Yusoki, other people probably think about you like this. That's not universal, but it is a sense of what that's like so that we can convey that world to you just right there in that core rulebook.
Alien Archive definitely talks about cultural details and stuff as well. It's not just mechanics. It's like, the Urogs are from Daikon, this moon that's, you know, all crystalline, and here let's talk about that, right? More people we haven't called on yet. Yeah.
Are there things in Starfinder that you wish you had thought about for Pathfinder or are looking to integrate into Pathfinder? I know this is a Starfinder panel, but...
Sure. Yeah. I mean... We've learned a lot. I know what I have, but I've been talking a lot.
Do you want to talk about the legacy conversion chapter and how we decided what we put in there and what we couldn't fit?
There's a stuff that we put in there that, like, after we did the core race write-ups, we kind of went in there with, like, some advice on maybe if you want to take your paladin class and sort of make it a Starfinder class, what you might do with that, or a bard, and how the mechanics interact. And that's broad advice, not so much like, this is exactly what it is, but so it's like, if you do this, it might not quite work, it'll be a little quick and dirty. We'll leave that to maybe some other third-party publishers. to do that kind of thing, that's. I don't know if we're planning on necessarily integrating anything sort of backwards into Pathfinder. That's a.
Well, you'll if you've seen Pathfinder Unchained, there's a number of things from Pathfinder Unchained influence some Starfinder. Like I said, that was something like, oh, that's really neat. can we take it whole cloth, or do we play with it a little more and make it for what we need? So that's a pretty recent connection that you might, that you'll see some things. Like, so if you, yeah, look at Unchained, look at that and be like, oh, that's very similar. Yeah.
Poisons, diseases, curses all use that Unchained track as opposed to the old legacy Pathfinder system.
And it's worth noting that while we are the core Starfinder team, we are not the core Pathfinder team, but the Pathfinder design team were integral in a big chunk of the core mechanics of getting this thing done. And everyone at Paizo tries to pay attention to all the products we're doing, especially the broad strokes. So they're aware of everything we've done. They come talk to us occasionally. We talk to them all the time. If at any point they go, we really like the Envoy, it's there. They can do whatever they want with it. But certainly there's nothing announced about taking those ideas. But the systems are similar enough that, like Pathfinder Unchained, that say, here's a different way to do things. If you decide to treat Starfinder as Pathfinder Unchained in space and grab some element of it for your Pathfinder game, if you're the sort of person that's comfortable doing that, there's certainly stuff in there you could bolt in.
But I also think that just in terms of philosophically, things that we learned that apply to Pathfinder, I think the biggest thing was like a lot of the work that Amanda specifically did on the how to get into the game, how to teach new players, how to play. Like, that was certainly inspired and informed by, like, our work on the beginner box and whatnot, but...
And even the strategy guide.
Yeah, and the strategy guide, certainly. But trying to figure out, how do you get new people into this game? Because we've always known that Pathfinder, like, the entire legacy of this style adventure game, is often one that you have to have a friend who already knows how to play if you want to really have fun and get into it easily. And so trying to figure out how to make that ramp-up process easier. And so we've got a whole chapter on sort of getting started and character creation and all of that, where we really walk you through it in a way that I am super happy with. I think that we knocked it out of the park. And I think that certainly Pathfinder is also looking at that. And, you know, as we produce more and more Pathfinder books, I think we'll be saying, okay, how can we make our Pathfinder stuff easier for people to get into, too?
Yeah, Amanda did a super job saying, if you have never played a role-playing game before and we give you this book, this 500-something page book, what can we do so that you don't look at it and go, I don't want to take a college math course and throw it away? I have heard many people at the company that have nothing to do with our team specifically say, that is such a great way to introduce people. So those are lessons learned that we hope to not unlearn.
I don't know that it'll be easier than the beginner box, but it'll be a hell of a lot easier than the core rulebook.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
All love to the Pathfinder core rulebook. It's why we're all employed. But you learn things over a decade.
The Pathfinder core rulebook, I don't think it's any secret that it was designed to give people that were already playing an incredibly similar game a version of that game that you could then play adventures that Paizo wanted to sell you. That's not a secret. That was a business plan at the time that made plenty of sense. We are at PaizoCon 10. It's been a while, so we are putting out a book in a different environment.
Right, and we stress tested as much as we possibly could. So we put it in front, you know, given the tight production schedule, we put it in front of folks who hadn't played RPGs before and said, what about this confuses you? What doesn't make sense? Because we're all, you know, 10-plus year, 20-plus year veterans of playing role-playing games. We know how to do it, and so language that makes total sense to us is going to super confuse somebody who hasn't come at it before. So as much as we possibly could, we had different versions of things. We were making changes up until the last minute and showing them to people and saying, okay, tell us where this needs to improve, so that way we can provide the best user experience for somebody who is excited about the game but does not have that 10 or 20 year experience.
As a game designer, there's very little more humbling than assuring people for 15 minutes that a sentence you wrote makes perfect sense and no one will be confused, and then taking it and putting it in front of people that have not been playing role-playing games for 30 years and having them go, I don't get the sentence, it's confusing. All right, well, that's why we play test. I was wrong. I was totally, totally, horribly wrong. But by doing that, and Amanda in particular did a lot of work to make sure that you could pick up this book understanding just English and figure out what we want you to do and how to do it.
All right, so we've only got a few minutes left, so I want to do kind of lightning round style, like quick questions, quick answers. Let's go start in the back there.
How does the damage resistance system change, especially for big objects and can't reasonably handle?
We have reworked the entire damage balancing system, but DR is basically the same.
Okay.
All right. Right here.
Brian Blaney asks, when will class supplements be coming?
Later.
In the future.
Yeah.
The setting,
for me, when I was watching last night, it was very much a Dick Tracy meets Blade Runner feel. I was wondering how you would summarize the core theme of the setting.
I think, like Pathfinder, we're trying to do it sort of everything for everyone. So one planet, you can totally have your, you know, cyberpunk feel. Another planet can be straight up, like, you know, sort of Sword and Planet, you know, another planet. I mean, Triaxis has a lot of Pern. Yeah. It was like space opera. Like, that's the thing that I love about Starfinder is all the different worlds means you can have every setting you want in the same universe and game system.
Holy plasma cannon.
Going back to the deities, what mechanical bonuses would someone get for worshiping the deity, or is it more just you get stuff from the church if you rate high enough hierarchy or whatever?
That comes from the priest theme. So in the same way, you generally don't get a mechanical bonus if you're playing a fighter in Pathfinder and you're worship of God. So if you really want to get some sort of mechanical, you should take the priest theme, because then you're really dedicating yourself.
Or be a mystic, right? Like,
yeah. Or be a mystic, yeah.
If you're
or take an appropriate feed, or
but yeah. like if this deity, if I worship this deity versus this deity, is there?
If you're referring to obedience and boons, we don't have that yet.
So or right. Just domain powers or anything like
for,
that.
For the most part, we have not spread out that thinly in the core rulebook, given everything we had to cram in there.
All right. Yeah. All right. And again, one more call. Please, hands if you haven't asked a question yet, because we've got so little time. All right. Down at the end.
Is there an equivalent for bag of holding and chain lightning?
Yes. Chain lightning, yes.
Bag of holding, yeah.
It got a different name, right? Bag of holding, I don't know if we have anything.
Ecological niches were considered and filled as best we could.
No, the bag of holding is like a tech item.
Oh, it's tech item.
It's the extra dimensional space.
Thank you.
Yeah, right there.
About starship combat, how scalable will it be? How many players can I have on one starship?
Well, it depends on how big your starship is, kind of, and how many roles. You want to, like, at a certain point, you don't want to have too many players, because it'll take a little bit longer. Same with any kind of normal thing. So it's back, got the same scalability as, say, character to character combat.
You keep saying five, but we'll get up to seven. Then.
Yeah, you can have two gunners. You can have two engineers. Yeah.
Right. Tira.
Okay. So if I wanted to be a caster type person in Starfinder, will there be. Am I going to be having issues where one race is so much better at the. Or are the attributes going to be flexible? Because one of the things that I dislike about Pathfinder sometimes is that you have these really rigid attribute arrays.
Every race will have the option, beginning at first level, to be good at every class.
Yes! Thank you!
That was a poor design. All right. Back there. Yeah.
This is directed individually to each of you. If there was one particular piece of flavor or mechanic or something that you would like to gush about, what would that be?
Everything about the Sheeran. I really love the Sheeran.
Aslanti Star Empire.
Holy Plasma Cannons.
Gisoki.
Technomancer. All
right there.
Yes. Last conversation I had with Wes Schneider a couple of years ago was about playability at high levels, because a lot of the things that happen at low levels make high-level play extraordinarily tedious. Was this addressed?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'll just say iterative attacks. Not there anymore.
Yep.
All right. Over there.
In the game master section, the back of Starfinder, are there some cool utility tools and stuff you guys designed to kind of help game masters come up with some cool adventures and design locations and stuff like that?
That's the whole point of that chapter. Yeah. Totally. Let's go right here.
FPL, is it mechanical, mystical, or both? Combination of both?
It's actually mechanical, because...
You can only enter the drift with technology.
Yeah.
No one has figured out how to do it with magic yet, so that's a place where science rules.
Yeah, trying in the God of Machines makes it that way. That said, it's a pretty damn magical place. Let's go... are we all out of people who haven't spoken yet? All right, great, then let's go.
All right, Zlatko Perez Luna Rafajlovsky, I have no idea how I said that, asks, how long until we get support for full or ninth level casters?
Yeah,
go for it.
Sixth level casters are full casters, they just have other stuff to do. Nine level casters may or may not be necessary in Starfinder, and we will add them when and if that is best for the game.
Yep, all right. Right here.
Techno demons, techno pixies, is there anything that's going to prevent a cybered up magical creature?
No, that's awesome. We got them on the cover of the core rulebook.
Yeah.
I'm going to tease a phrase real quick from Alien Archive. Reactor Sprite. It may not be called that, but that's a sort of a concept that appears.
All right, let's go back there.
Quick question. I'm going to find a little off-topic. Miniatures, size pawns.
Yes.
Okay.
On their way. In fact, I think there are some in the case in the store right now.
Yeah, land ships.
You can go look at the previews now.
Ninja Division.
They are super cool. All
right, let, one or two more questions right there.
Kind of on the same note, but I know I've pre-ordered my books and things already in our training. Do you have a feeling of how big this thing is selling so far? And
So far, it's been really good.
So we switched Delve before it's even out over to Starfinder, something we've never ever done before. I wonder why we did that.
Yeah. Seems that we've been really pleased by the response. Let's put it that way.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. Right
there. I know that this is not covered maybe by what you guys are doing, but you may have heard. Are subscriptions coming for Starfinder content?
Yes, and very soon. Like, they're rolling out imminently.
Oh, great.
So, all right, let's go there.
Please, please, please allow a PDF subscription for Starfinder content. I would sign up right away for everything PDF.
I know it's something that they're working on. I don't know. That's the tech team and customer service, but I know that they know that there's
well,
an audience.
Well, the executive team, for that matter,
it.
Yeah. So
I know that we all want it.
Your input is noted. We will see what is possible.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Size categories. Obviously, Colossal might not be big enough for Starship. Like Empire level starships and
starships
are
different sizes.
Starships have their own size categories. They have the same names though, but they are actually different scales. Completely
okay.
different scales.
Yep.
Alright. And last one right there.
What are the Pact Worlds?
What are the Pact Worlds?
So what's that acronym you used to remember all the Pact Worlds?
I don't know.
He's making it up right now.
Although we should have one.
It's basically the planet Singularian's solar system that were originally introduced in Pathfinder, and they've come together in a pact.
It's kind of like the UN meets the European Union, but with
space
planets instead of countries.
Yeah, everything in what was used to be we called the Galarian solar system back when Galarian was there are now called the Pact Worlds because those worlds have pretty much all signed the Absalom Pact. That is a mutual self-defense and maybe space mercantile treaty that mostly doesn't interfere with their local affairs.
Yeah, although there is some stuff in that system like Octurn, technically part of the Pact Worlds is like a protectorate, but you don't really want them voting on anything. And I think that's where we got to get it for today. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Woo!
Good job, folks.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to NoDirectionPodcast.com.